Welcome to the 2010 Polycast Christmas Special.
Have a holly jolly Christmas. It's the best time of the year. I don't know if there'll be snow, but have a cup of cheer.
Civilization podcast focused on game strategy. Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mean Team.
QNL.
I'm Dan Q, and I'm joined by Makalua.
Santa baby, won't you fix surviving P for me?
Now it's singing.
Oh!
With 100% more singing.
What? Oh, I was somewhere else. Also joined by the main team.
Season's greetings, one spirit at a time.
And Q&L.
Merry Kwanzaa?
Just for Mackie's benefit, although Mackie has authorized singing by singing herself, I'm going to buck the trend and not actually do that.
Thank you. It's my Christmas present, right?
That's right. That can be your Christmas present every year, Mackie. There we go. Well, it is the gift that keeps on giving. Oops, I did it again. I destroyed your sieve, got lost in the game.
Oh, no. Another one that I thought might be fun, but it would take us, like, the whole episode, maybe, would be to rank our favorite leaders from all the Civ titles and why. But that's a backup plan.
All right, so for our first episode next season, everyone will write a 1,000-word essay on their favorite leaders across all Civ games.
You'd be surprised how quickly I can come up with that.
1,000 would probably be easy, Dan.
Not finished yet. You need to have a bibliography that is annotated. And you need
but there are no Civ books, so we're going to give you WikiLinks.
I didn't say how good references they had to be. Reference number one, my mom.
Oh, yeah. Reference number two, your mom.
Discussed the various methods that Civ has used to control infinite city sprawl throughout the years. In an exhaustive discussion, we discussed each of the social policy trees and the benefits and difficulties associated with using them. Then we ranked the top 5 most common improvements in Civ 5 as per Dan Q. And finally, we gave a summary of the year 2010 for Civilization and Polycast and how awesome we have been. I thought it might be fun to talk about each of the anti-infinite city sprawl mechanics that the different civs have attempted to implement.
Go right ahead. Take the lead.
Well, I might need some help here for Civ 1, which I did not play. Was there any anti-ICS in Civ 1 whatsoever? I have a feeling there wasn't.
No, that's where ICS was invented. Because somebody got to messing around and said, hey, if I put all these cities really close together, hey...
Well, one of the fundamental things for ICS is that it's cheaper and more effective just to expand a new city than it is to build a building or improve existing cities. You basically have 3 major mechanics that have been used. One for Civ 2 and 3, one for Civ 4, and one for Civ 5. Now, a lot of people in Civ 5 mistakenly compare happiness from Civ 4 to Civ 5, and they serve completely different roles in each game. You know, one of them's a city phenomenon, one of them's an empire-wide phenomenon. Probably the best comparison for happiness in Civ 5 is to the other anti-ICS mechanics. Essentially, happiness is to limit your city sprawl as well as your vertical growth to an extent. But most of the problems with happiness come when you have huge empires. So comparing it to maintenance and corruption waste is viable, in my opinion. And they all have their benefits and drawbacks. Like, one of the things I really liked about corruption and waste was that you didn't have to worry, like, if you captured a new city or if you founded a new city, about it dragging the rest of your empire in a negative way. The worst thing that could happen is that you got no net benefit at all. A lot of people really didn't like that mechanic anyway, because a lot of cities became useless over time. I don't know. There's still ways to get at least a little bit from each of the cities you owned back then. I think it had potential as a mechanic in the future games, given how they changed the government setups, such as social policies and, you know, your civics from Civ 4, that they could have been balanced a little bit better with corruption and waste. And I actually like Civ 5's happiness more than Civ 4's maintenance. Civ 4's maintenance is a pain. Civ 5, the unhappiness function is relatively simple. You have another 2 unhappiness or so from dropping another city. That's pre-patch. I don't know what this 12.3 patch is going to do, or 12.3 patch announcement. And then you have a component for population. And you can actually see the breakdown right there, and it's consistent enough where you could figure it out. With Civ 4 maintenance, when it was combining the distance maintenance with the number of cities maintenance and the size of cities maintenance and the civic maintenance and all this stuff, it got very difficult to tell how much you had, and it varied a lot by difficulty level. So, in my opinion, Civ 4's maintenance is probably the worst of the anti-ICS mechanics, especially because the AI was given such a huge advantage in it at any, you know, relatively high difficulty level. It's very frustrating. So if I had to rank the anti-ICS mechanics in a vacuum, I would actually put corruption and waste first, and then Civ 5's happiness second, and then Civ 4's maintenance third. But remember that it's again in a vacuum. For corruption and maintenance to work in a modern game now, we would need to have it interfacing with your social policies, with your government, more so that you could actually find a way to counteract it, or maybe counteract certain things in distant cities, but not everything, depending on what you choose. It was pretty simple and straightforward mechanic, too. But again, my ranking of these aren't a vacuum. Like, just as a concept when it comes to limiting ICS. And you could just tweak the maintenance and corruption for however many cities you want to be viable in an empire for a given era. Sorry, I'm done now.
This monologue has been brought to you.
Yeah, the Civ 3 model, you could work around it, because people figured out that if you put them in a pattern where everything was an even distance, you could have these rings of corruption. So you'd have a literal core of really good cities, and then some outer fringe cities, which would help with your science and research, but not necessarily production, because I think the production maybe got hit a little bit harder with the corruption than your actual tax stuff, because you had more ways to bring it up. The killer thing has always been distance, and I'm glad distance maintenance is gone, because that was kind of silly.
Yeah, this is the first Civ that has that.
Actually, the United States, our capital's on the East Coast, we have big cities on the West Coast. Does it really cost them more to work?
Move it to Nebraska.
Exactly. That's what you'd have to do in real life if it was like Civ. Capital would be Omaha, Nebraska.
That would cause some very interesting effects in Australia, I'll tell you what.
Oh, God. You have to build on top of Iris Rock.
I'll probably get some hate mail for promoting corruption and waste over Civ 4's maintenance, but I really think it was a better model from a foundation standpoint.
Yeah, and if the distance maintenance hadn't been kind of a black box thing where you couldn't figure out what it was going to do and it broke it out the way happiness is broken out if you hover over it in Civ 5, I mean, that's another good thing with Civ 5, there's breakdowns on all sorts of things.
Yeah.
And it's not in your face all the time either.
I hate on a lot of things on Civ 5 because they're done so poorly, but it's true that in that regard, Civ 5 is better than the previous title, so that you could actually figure out what's going on more easily, although you still don't have any formula for predicting what happens when you plant that new city. So that's a little frustrating, but overall it is a lot more clear what's going on. You can learn faster what the game is doing to you.
Social policies to talk about. Now, as with anything, there is no absolute lists. There is no exact formula. Everything is very circumstantial. Basing all of this starting at the ancient era, particularly as the game progresses, there's so many ways to go based on not only your preferences, your strengths, and also taking into account your weaknesses. Also, what next steps you need to do because of human and or AI players, you know, getting all up in your grill. And yes, I wanted to find some way to incorporate that expression.
It's his new favorite phrase, people.
In terms of the top social policies, quote-unquote, let's start with the ancient era, where you have three choices, which is honor, liberty, and tradition. And wouldn't you know it, but I actually rank them in that alphabetical order, starting
with... You better put honor first. Because we have to question what's wrong with you.
As it stands now, as of this recording, at the very least, and it certainly hasn't been the case otherwise since the game has been released, so a 25% combat bonus against barbarians and the notification when a new barbarian encampment spawns in revealed territory. So then the question becomes, well, what way do you go after that? For myself, I will say warrior code, so we have the great general appear outside the capital. Essentially, you're looking at early aggression here. If I'm finding an AI to go after, and by AI, I do mean a quote-unquote proper AI. I'm not a city-state bully, except in multiplayer games, when I need something else to do.
Yeah, Dan was confused last night. We were playing and there was no city states, and he gets finished first. Okay, what am I doing now? Oh, yeah, Wonder Whoring.
And ICS. Yeah. And then after Warrior Code, I also like Discipline for the plus 15% combat strength for military units, which have another military unit in an adjacent tile. Specifically looking at civilizations that kind of, it's as if you didn't have enough reason to go honor, finding yourself just as either Japan or China. Japan units fight as though they were at full strength even when damaged, and then effectiveness and spawn rate of great generals is increased with Wu. All another reason to go on to it. I'll just quote Magin here from his social policies in use, so I guess in my top list I'm actually incorporating a forum thread. I know. He says, the quote, the downfall to this is that you'll be missing out on the empire-building policies for some time, but with no close rivals giving you problems, you have time for fixing that later, quote unquote. I don't know if there's anything to add to honor specifically, but I'll pause here.
In a game where I'm trying to be more builder, I will go liberty first instead of going for honor. But if I, in the first few turns and with my scouts, I find a neighbor nearby, oh, I am so going honor.
Yeah, it's just so much stronger than the other social policies in the ancient era right now. It's hard to beat it.
So I will take that great general, and I will be moving that great general to the front. And, of course, this obviously works more with AI players than human players, what I'm about to say, unless, you know, they're completely out to lunch. Or dinner, you know, depending upon the time of day. Or breakfast. Huh. That I'm moving all those units to the border to be watching their movement, but also, of course, to be in position. Mackie already mentioned kind of going into liberty being the second. This is, as Madgen also describes in the social policies, a new threat as mass expansion. So by the time you can get to your first social policy, I've probably found some proper AI by this point. But if I haven't, then I'm looking at Liberty, where the speed of production of all settlers in the Civ is increased by 50%, and now we've got this next patch saying it's going to reduce it only to the capital. But it's still not going to be enough for me to start changing my view. And the fact that this, by the way, conflicts with the industrial age autocracy is really not much of a consideration at all. If you're actually getting to the industrial age, well, then you can start worrying about things then. So after Liberty, then what in the heck? I mean, it depends on the game. Sometimes maybe Liberty, maybe that's enough for that mass expansion. But maybe next or a little later on, I decide, okay, you're going to go down the Liberty track. What way to go? And I'm going to argue, generally, going down the citizenship path for worker construction rate increased by 25%, and then meritocracy for the plus one happiness for each city you own connected to your capital.
Doesn't the patch note say that that's going to be nerfed?
Well, it says it's reduced effects of Forbidden Palace and meritocracy, happiness per city. It doesn't say specifics, so I'm not quite certain what exactly they're going to reduce it to. I'm reserving judgment about whether I'm going to change my view or not. I don't think it's going to be enough. Alternatively, you could go the collective rule for newly found city star with 50% of the food necessary to gain their second citizen, and then Republic for plus one production in every city. If meritocracy is nerfed enough, then I might recommend forget citizenship meritocracy, go collective rule and republic, because early on, if you can get any increase in production, because we know how production is a very valuable commodity in this game, absolutely going for it. So really, it becomes honor or liberty. And what I'll say about tradition, just as an immediate preface here, is if you are a one city challenge one, okay, now there's a situation I could see. Maybe if you're Gandhi in India with the unhappiness from a number of cities being doubled and unhappiness from number of citizens halved. And as far as civs for liberty, really thinking about liberty, if you're looking for that mass expansion, you know that with France, you get +2 culture per turn from cities before discovering steam power. That's another reason to go the liberty track.
Hmm. The tradition's 33% bonus in their own territory can be really annoying, though, for somebody who's playing defensively.
Yes, under oligarchy. If you're thinking about being a wonder whore, you may be interested to select Ramses, who of course gets +21 production towards wonder construction anyway, and then go tradition, and then for aristocracy, which gives you +33% when building wonders. Which at that point, it's kind of like, okay, those two things combined, whoa.
Yep, perfect target for everyone else.
Anything else before we go on to classical?
No, not really. Other than that, even with the ridiculous changing of the social policy rules, that you can get into classical and medieval pretty quickly. So the next couple are going to be viable alternatives to anything but maybe like your first social policy.
Yeah, I will say that what I would actually like to see when it comes to social policies is that at the outset in ancient, you have the choice of three. Now, classical introduces piety and piety only. It would be interesting, for instance, if they were to take one of the three ancient ones and make it available at classical instead, along with piety, which I think might make some more interesting choices, especially if they were to say, oh, I don't know, especially liberty or honor. But in any way, that's a separate aside. Piety, there are times when I would consider adopting this. It's not one of those absolute situations. Let's just talk about piety first, getting ahead of myself. Immediately grants a bonus to the civ's happiness total of 2 points. So if you've found that you've got yourself some rapid expansion, say, thanks to honor and taking out a nearby neighbor or two, I would hope that, and you should hope that, you have communists of happiness resources and happiness buildings that you wouldn't necessarily have to adopt piety at this point and use the culture points to adopt it. Especially now that they're going to add the game option to disable turn blocking promotions and policy choices, so you could actually effectively bypass this. If you were Montezuma and the Aztecs, where you're gaining culture from the Empire for each enemy killed, you might think about piety a little more, but not necessarily. If I was going to go piety, let's say you've decided you're going to do that, I'm really not looking at that it's granting the immediate happiness bonus of 2. I'm looking a little farther ahead to organized religion, where the amount of happiness required to start a golden age is reduced by 25%. And we know how awesome golden ages can be in terms of helping progress your economy in particular, right? Because then it gets into, oh, now you've got more gold coming in, so now you can actually be spending more money on probably units, maybe buildings, especially when, as we've talked about before, how cheaper it generally is to purchase a unit or upgrade a unit as opposed to building a new unit outright.
The biggest problem with piety is that you have to have it instead of rationalism, and most people consider rationalism, if not the strongest social policy tree, then at least way up there, and definitely the best for science. Whereas piety is probably the best for happiness in culture that you have as an option early, because you can use Mandate of Heaven and a surplus happiness to basically bankroll more social policies early on and try to get an advantage that way.
Sometimes I'm just like, no, I'm just going to leave that alone and I'm going to wait until I can get to something at medieval rather than go with piety. I mean, really, it's the amount of happiness required to start a golden age by 25% that I'm really looking at. But yeah, the theocracy for the cities that you settle yourself. If you've been successful in taking out nearby neighbors and now it's okay, I've got a number of backfill to do and I'm going to settle cities in there, then that can also be helpful.
Could always raise and replace too.
Yes, you could do that. Now then, after Mandate of Heaven, there is Reformation, with the Empire immediately enters a 6-turn Golden Age. Yeah. But then that could get you to free religion, which is 2 free social policies. But considering it's at the end of this tree, it's not something that I'm typically considering. That there's other later policies like rationalism, like you said, that offer, I think, greater benefit.
Although that's probably one of the best ones for culture. Not that anyone goes for culture because of how the game's balanced, but it's there. If you save taking that policy until towards the end of your culture push, that will be worth tremendous amounts of culture. Because it doesn't really care when you take it.
No.
To get your two policies. So you can take that sucker and get like tens of thousands worth of culture potentially, making it one of the strongest potential social policies you can get in a culture game.
So now we get to medieval, which perhaps the discussion may get even a bit more lively now, because now we're starting to get into some greater considerations and greater trade-offs and more variables, blah, 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 blah. So we have commerce and patronage, where commerce will boost gold output in your capital city by 25%. And if you go with patronage, then your influence with city-states degrades 25% slower than normal. Let's just say at the outset, if you are Greece, I would really be looking at patronage for some reason.
But only after you're done with the important ones in honor, of course.
Yes.
Yes. For our listeners with Greece, a city-state influence degrades at half and recovers at twice the normal rate. So now you add degrading 25% slower than normal on top of that. Hello. You should also consider it for Siam and their leader.
Remenkang?
Yeah.
I don't think I'm pronouncing that right, but close enough. It's American pronunciation.
The guy that does a jig when you declare on him.
But if you were to go with patronage with him, when you're already getting food and culture from friendly city-states being increased by 50%, there's another tie-in to your civ-specific bonus. Just for the ways that I have preferred to expand, I mentioned, you know, being the civ-state a bully in cooperative multiplayer games when there's no proper AI to go after. I know that there is a great advantage to be going the city-state route, but I'll admit in my single-player games, I generally tend to leave them alone. So I am going to actually choose commerce, generally speaking. Whoa, I can hear it already. Now, Imagine says that the rest of commerce gets a bit unfocused, quote-unquote. So what way are we going to go about? Well, I will generally go trade unions after commerce, with the maintenance paid on roads and railroads reduced by 20%. And then after that comes mercantilism, with purchasing items in cities requires 25% less gold, and then protectionism, plus one happiness from each luxury resource. I will stop typically after commerce and then trade unions. The maintenance paid on roads and railroads, I realize that you don't have roads and railroads everywhere now that we actually have maintenance on that. But with the advantage, of course, in having roads and connecting your cities to get those trade roads and get more gold. Although, if you happen to be on a map that is water-based, then if you went commerce, then you could go naval tradition for plus one movement and plus one sight for naval combat units, and then merchant navy for plus three production in all of your coastal cities. And particularly also if you happen to be Elizabeth in England, who already gets plus two movement for all naval units, or even Darius, who during a Golden Age units receive a plus one movement, I would recommend commerce as well.
That merchant navy is pretty strong. There's some maps where it's worth making it happen, rather than just being on a dedicated water map. Because that three hammers per city is a lot stronger than that one hammer per city in Liberty's path.
Yeah, Fractal, I think, because it tends to produce a snaky continent, so you have more coastline to put more cities down. If you're getting plus three in every coastal city, that's a lot of production.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, if you do an archipelago, that's just, you know, gaming the map at that point.
Well, it's reasonable, though. I mean, anyone can take it. And it really, you need the production.
Yeah, SF5 is a little production short.
Yeah.
Now, if you were to choose the patronage path, then where would you go? Well, you could go aesthetics with the minimum influence level with all city-states is 20. But I would argue that you're better to then go with philanthropy, with gold gifts to city-states producing 25% more influence, so you can target the city-states that you really want to have that influence with. And then if you actually went philanthropy, not only for that reason, but if you got to scholasticism, which I hope I'm pronouncing properly, all city-states which are allies provide a science bonus equal to 33% of what they produce for themselves. And if you are already on the patronage path and have philanthropy, then it makes it that much easier to get to the allied status with city-states, and now you're going to get a science bonus?
It's not that strong of a science bonus, but it's helpful. I wouldn't knock that minimum 20 influence thing, though, because that comes into play anytime that you've had city-states declaring war on you, or because they were allied to another AI, or maybe you picked off their worker early in the game, whatever it is that you did, that will reset that instantly. So you're talking about an upfront benefit versus the one where you have to buy into each city-state. But if you plan to buy out a lot of city-states, that one might be stronger. I'm not sure.
Well, I certainly would say never say go aesthetics. I'm going to put it out there that I think philanthropy on the whole is stronger down the patronage path, but hey, there's...
I would too, but only because of the benefits that come after it sooner. Because you can't really take anything after aesthetics for a while if you're going down that path. It's not until you've completed both sides that you can take the one where you're getting more great people from the city-states.
Educated elites.
Yeah. That's pretty crazy if you have, like, 10 allies.
And also, because it's educated elite, it's alliteration, so obviously it's a good choice.
Ah.
Mackie agrees with me, I could tell.
Depends on your definition of agree.
Well, my definition is the only one that counts right now. So, oh. We then get to Renaissance with rationalism and freedom. I will rank rationalism ahead of freedom. Let's talk about rationalism then. Yeah, you immediately allow the Civ to enter a 5-turn golden age, and that's nice, but I'm looking more down what else does that then unlock? Secularism, for instance, plus 2 science from every specialist, if you're doing the specialist. Free thought, plus 1 science from every trading post. Ho. And scientific revolution, 2 free technologies. Oh my.
Yeah.
Secondarily, you could go humanism for plus 1 happiness from every university and sovereignty for plus 15% science while the empire is happy, but the secularism path is stronger, I would say.
You might even want to go with a tag team of rationalism and freedom and get the reduced food costs, but we'll get to that in a little bit here.
Freedom. Initially, specialist population in cities producing only half the amount of unhappiness that they would normally. You could then go civil society for specialists consuming only half the normal amount of food. Next one. Constitution. Culture increased by 100% in all cities that have a world wonder.
That is a lot.
That one's a little weird.
Well, it's a lot if you've been playing a longer game and you've got...
Yeah.
Even if it's just the capital and maybe a couple of other cities with a world wonder, but that's usually places where you've been building a lot of culture buildings, so it's just like this big amplifier.
Yeah, it really is.
Then the other base choice after going freedom is combat strength of cities increased by 33% and universal suffrage. No, I think I'm going to go with constitution after that.
The rank 1 culture social policy, cost of future policies reduced by 25%.
Tasty.
Ah, yes, free speech. Industrial era, where we have both autocracy and order. I would put autocracy ahead of order. Autocracy, reducing unit maintenance fee by 33%, allowing the Civ to field an even larger army at the same cost. So then, which way do we go? You could go the militarism path for gold costs of purchasing units reduced by 33%, or populism, which is wounded military units inflict 25% more damage than normal. I will argue militarism, for reasons that we discussed before, because then police state, unhappiness in occupied cities reduced by 50%. If militarism wasn't enough for you, police state, hello.
That one is ridiculous. You can take a pop and annex it, and if it's like pop 8 or higher, you get happiness for annexing.
No courthouse required.
That is so ridiculous. I don't think we have a word for how ridiculous it is. There's something that needs a nerf.
Well, I don't think so, because it's so late in the game.
Oh, true.
But the way it works is it reduces all unhappiness in annexed cities by 50%. Not just the annexed city component of the annexed city. So if it's a big city, you're also having your anger from population in that city, which can easily be stronger than the annex anger penalty when it's halved. So...
Wow. It's late in the game unless you do an advanced start.
Yeah.
I can't believe I'm actually arguing for advanced starts, people. Oh.
Well,
anyway,
what can you do?
But there is actually a word for how ridiculous that is, Mackie. It's called redonkulous. Mm. That's the word you're looking for. You're welcome.
Redonky K punch ridiculous.
Now, if you went populism, you could then get to fascism, which is the quantity of strategic resources produced by the empire increased by 100%. And then I started thinking about, Okay, well, if you were, say, Russia, for instance, and you already get uranium resources, provide double quantity, or even as Arabia with Harun al-Rashid, oil resources already providing double quantity, they're being strategic resources. If you really felt like you needed it or you wanted to try to play with that, okay, but 9 times out of 10, my gosh, militarism has to be the ideal path. If you went right to the end for total war, which means you'd have to get both of those, and then for 20 turns, all military units receive a 33% attack bonus.
Hmm.
That's a pretty situational thing.
Yeah. And yet another one that's going to get nerfed by the inability to store social policies. It's going to be harder to time the usage of that.
Order. Increase the production rate of all buildings by 25%. You have a lot of buildings?
Yeah. If I had this in an earlier era, that would be great. This late in the game, I'm building other things, not necessarily buildings. The 25% discount on units, that'd be great.
Yeah.
I'd rather have this at, like, piety or something, like the old organized religion of Civilization IV. It's just too little, too late.
Let's say, just for the sake of argument, we're going to go down the order path. So what one would we choose as an outset?
You're going straight down the middle. I don't think you can make an argument for anything else. Because at the bottom of order is 5 hammers in every city tile. And that is crazy.
I missed that.
Oh, yes, communism.
And the others on the either side aren't too strong. I think one of them, like, increases the rate at which city-state influence decays for other civs. And I forget what the other one is. But reducing building maintenance, increasing building production, that's nice. But the 5 hammers per city tile is amazing, if you can get it in a reasonable time frame.
If we were to look at order specifically, and then is there any particular civ that you could say, well, maybe depending upon the circumstance, maybe you want to try for order just to see that maybe there's some other little advantage from another civ that makes it more desirable as compared to others.
Not really.
Nothing just jumping out at the top of my head, actually.
Anyone where you ICS, so all of them. Ha ha.
Yeah, and it's not like if you're playing Greece or Siam and you want to automatically go for patronage just to make it even more ridiculous.
Oh, the other one we didn't talk about was that negative 50% anger from number of cities in order.
Planned economy, yes.
Right now, that is perfectly equal to meritocracy and the Liberty Tree. So, considering how late it comes, it's weak. However, once they change how that works, it might be different. But regardless, if you're going down the order path or you're starting on a late era or whatever, that is as strong as meritocracy, even in the current patch. So that's definitely worth a look, especially since it's on the way to the 5 hammers for city tile and communism.
All right, and I think that concludes our look at social policies and you.
Oh my god, that took forever.
That did take forever in a day, didn't it?
Good times.
There's always good times on this show.
That's true.
Santa baby, slip the sable under the tree for me. Been an awful good girl, Santa baby, I'm hurried down the chimney tonight.
Quick, find a top list.
I didn't actually have a plan for a top list. I had a plan to, like, listen to whatever Dan brought up for his top list and then critique it.
Oh! Wait, how did you read my notes?
All right, the top 10 ways I am awesome. No, just kidding.
Oh,
what, 10? We're going to be here all day.
Some of our listeners are going, he can get to 10.
Some of your co-hosts are going, he can get to 10.
Yeah, you're right, Mackie. That is what Lisa's thinking, I'm sure.
Oh, quit ganging up on the noob.
Noob.
Listen to the term that you used to refer to her. Come on now, Mackie. That's very politically incorrect.
Oh?
I'm a noobet, thanks.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my bad. Noobet.
The top improvements in Civilization V. Number 5, your fishing boats for your fish and your whales and your pearls. So for food for those first couple and then for happiness for the pearls, as rare as pearls happen to seem to be. Sniff.
Yeah, quite a bit.
Whales are Dan's favorite resource, listeners, just so you know.
That's why he's all happy. Yes, fishing boats again. I can have whales.
Been true since Civ 4, maybe sooner.
Well, they used to be, but they can't be my favorite anymore because now there's actually a rational reason to make them my favorite.
Mm.
Or a favorite, see? Because you can actually use them earlier and they don't expire. So I'll find something else. Number four, which gotta have kind of a tie because they're all kind of in the same vein. This is your plantation, your quarry, and your camp. So plantation, can I say this in one breath? I'll try. Cotton, banana, dye, incense, silk, spice, sugar, and wine. I made it. Quarry just for the marble, and then of course camp for your fur and ivory and deer. And of course fur for the happy, as well as the ivory and the deer for the food.
I don't know, Dan. I think I'd put those on every tile if I could. I'm just saying.
Yeah, but you can't see.
But that doesn't make them bad improvements. That just makes them less common improvements. There's a difference.
But they're not as good because they're not as common.
Yeah, I'm talking about in practical terms. I love your theory, don't get me wrong.
Dan likes quantity over quality.
Apparently so.
Number three, your farm and your pastures. So farm plus one food. I really actually like putting those on plains because it already has two food on there, so you can get to three. And plains also have the plus one production. And, of course, if there's wheat on the plains, OMG. And then, of course, for pasture, horse. And then, of course, for the cattle and the sheep. And I will save all of us the barnyard noises that are currently in my head.
Yes.
So then number two, mine, of course, for the plus production, especially with your gems, gold, and silver for happiness, and then, of course, iron, and then later on coal, uranium, and aluminum. And then secondarily, if you actually get this far along in the game, which I have yet to, even on an advanced start, but that's because I usually go, oh, I don't like this, and I give up, the manufactory for plus three production.
You've built those? Never built those.
Those are in later game best on plains that already has plus one production. But, of course, they're only worst on desert because desert itself has no yield. Darn that desert. I mean, even tundra has one food. Desert. At least it's passable. Okay, I'll give it that.
Desert has oil. Sometimes.
Sometimes. So now we're at the number one. Our combination, your trading post, and then your road for trade route connections and increased speed of units. And then if you actually get this far, you could give yourself some custom houses for plus four gold. And then trading posts, of course, plus two gold.
Mines, man. Mines are number one. Assuming you can build and work one, God.
Yeah, honestly, because of production.
Well, that was number two.
The problem with trading posts is that they're not food positive, and without the maritime giving you food to work your hammer tiles, then you can't get any production other than just purchasing things constantly, which isn't bad.
I think a fair honorable mention, later game that it is, but there is the Academy for plus five science from a tile. I really don't have a list of quote-unquote worst improvements, but ones that I think that have more limited usage would be that single tile fortification that is your citadel and your plus one production on forest hexes lumber mill. I'm not saying they're useless, I'm just saying less useful.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, really? What if you have a city that is surrounded, that is completely flat, and your only production is forests? It is not useless then.
The food to hammer conversion on the lumber mills are pretty nice, too.
You're not losing so much food to keep the city growing while you're trying to ramp up your production at the same time.
I mean, in that situation, yes. As compared to the other ones, more common, again, back to the common thing.
This is the top five most common improvement list, not yes. Best. Okay.
Feliz Navidad. Feliz Navidad. Feliz Navidad. Prospero año y felicidad.
Highlights from 2010 in the Civ community. On the horizon, we've got Civilization Network, which, if for no other reason, then we're going to expand the Civ series influence as Civilization Revolution did on the console platform. Now for Facebook and those social network gaming situations, they too can know the joy of loving only your computer and nobody else. Also, a new Civ board game, what goes around comes around, full circle. This one being from Fantasy Flight Games, which has done similar things for StarCraft and Warcraft franchises. Outreach, we know that when Civ 5 was released on September 21st, Maryland actually declared it Sid Meier's Civilization 5 Day. And Christopher Tin's Baba Yetu, or Civ 4 theme, has been nominated for a Grammy in Best Instrumental Arrangement Accompanying Vocalists. He's also got a Grammy nomination for his Calling All Dawns CD, which includes Baba Yetu. With the release of Civilization 5 came some new videos for Civilization Anonymous, which the ones for Civilization 4 were quite good. I think the ones on Civ Anon overall have an edge. There definitely is a sense of humor in there. And there were also some interesting contests that came about. And then selfishly, Polycast itself, we had the Civ 5 focus special with lead designer John Schaefer and marketing associate Pete Burry, both from Firaxis Games. We had lots of extensive and or exclusive and timely details for the Civ community in a relaxed atmosphere that has definitely, I think, fair to say, increased the exposure for the show, giving us more positive feedback and constructive criticism so we can have an even larger audience. And we've also been successfully nominated in the Best Produced in Gaming categories for the 2010 Podcast Awards, which is in and of itself a shiny. And of course, what might be the number one highlight for the Civ community and Civ franchise in 2010? I have to think about that for a moment. Oh, Civ 5 was released. What are you
wrong? It was Polycast episode 100.
Oh yeah,
you're right. I should have included that under the Polycast category.
It's its own category because it was the most important thing. Civ 5 cannot come close.
We actually went live for the first time, and we also had both representatives from 2K and Firaxis on there. And with Civ 5 release, yeah, there have been some pros and some cons.
Multiplayer.
Overall, I think it was a pretty good year for the Civ community and Polycast. Or not, it was an absolutely shit year, the worst ever. And it's like I killed the conversation again.
No, we were just having a moment of silence.
Yeah.
For the year that was 2010. Oh, yeah. Dear. Okay.
I want to wish you a merry
today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
You can Skype us at the Polycast or email us at thepolycast@gmail.com.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast and Revcast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
Thank you for listening to the 2010 Polycast Christmas Special, joined, as always, by Mackie.
And it is time for me to find more caffeine, as per tradition.
The main team.
Our pact of secrecy against Dan Q has ended, listeners. But don't worry, we may review it next year.
And Q&L.
Bye, have a good Christmas. Bye.
But at least the option is there.
All right. We like options.
Wow.
Other notable things from the patch. This may help in multiplayer, especially cooperative multiplayer. Reduced points from Wonders and Cities. Increased points for population.
Thank you. No more Wonder Horror.
Whoops.
Dan. Phil, too.
I'll put forth the argument that the biggest asshole in any Civ game has been the human player.
Yep. Particular human players? Sure, yeah.
That went without saying, Dan.
All right, so let's do... let's do a summary.
We ramble about stuff.
Yeah, basically.
Well, I could just use that for every episode summary now. We ramble about stuff.
The most unfocused ramble about Civ this year.
And that's saying something.
Yeah.
We're very tangential.
date December 4th, 2010. Civilization 4, Warlords, and Beyond the Sword sound clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Christmas songs clips in order of first appearance. Burl Ives, A Holly Jolly Christmas. Kenny G, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. Gene Autry, Here Comes Santa Claus. Madonna, Santa Baby. And Jose Feliciano, Feliz Navidad. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.